Greetings and salutations, everyone. Again, this is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. until a little after 11, we do this. Back in the old days, it started in 1982 under the heading of Dick, K2RIW, who unfortunately is now a silent key. But we keep it going in memory of him. And I hope you all came ready with some questions and to participate tonight. Tonight I'm trying something a little different for our woebegone little repeater in Glen Oaks. I'm trying brute force. Rather than my usual 50 watts of power, I am apparently pumping about 150 watts right now and thinking that hopefully the 4 or 5 dB gain will kind of force it into full quieting. So I hope I'm able to maintain this. If not, we can always fall back to the UHF link that Lou has set up for me, thankfully. And we'll give it a try and see how things work out. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, I always want to remind everyone that if you will want to reach me by email instead of through the radio, either to ask a question, propose a topic of discussion, offer a puzzle. We're always interested in puzzles. I'm going to try something if we have time today, which is a new type of a puzzle which I've called Stuff I Heard on a Repeater, in which we'll discuss things that people say on repeaters, whether they're true, false, or indifferent. Anyway, also, if you want me to ask Paul to take a look at some space-related thing, so just send the emails to me at mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag at, my call sign is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, .com. Also, there's going to be a whole bunch of links on my new links on my link page. This will include stuff that's a little bit not really appropriate for the science talk because either it has too many illustrations or it's space-related, which I like to leave to Paul. But at your leisure, you can read those. And there's a series of articles that I would normally use for the science talk, except that we don't have much of the science talk anymore because it's taken up with other things. So all those links are available at your leisure. They will stay available for the foreseeable future, and you can get to them by typing into the browser roy.ac2gs.com. The chat room is open. You can either go through Limark's page link for it, or you can type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that will take you to the chat page. I stream audio of W2VL almost 24/7, so if you would like to get it on a computer or a iPad or a cell phone, and you don't have a radio at the time or you're out of range of the repeater, you just type into a browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you a stream. And I always want to remind people of Mike KC2NJI's wonderful archive of the Technical Net. Goes back as far as September of 2006, and it's available at amateurradio.tv. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what I have planned for you tonight. Okay, tonight, as usual, I will ask if anyone has any questions or topics. We will take their first name and their call sign, and we will try to get to them in the order that they check in. Sometime between 8:30 and 8:45, we will have another installment of Andy's Corner, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's part of a series of technical repair. Andy has been involved in that for most of his life, and he's rather brilliant at it, and it's rather intriguing trying to figure out how he figures it out. So I hope you all look forward and enjoy that. When he's done, I'll come back. We'll finish up the questions. Maybe I'll try my little Stuff I Heard on a Repeater puzzles for you, and we'll try and take it up to about 10:15. At 10:15, Paul, WS2N, will bring us the SpaceNet report. That should take us to about 11 o'clock, and I will come back and tie a bow on it and wish you well and call it a night. So that's my plan if the repeater and my amplifier are able to handle this all. So let me drop and request people to check in for any questions or topics tonight. Please give me your first name and your call sign.
City 202B, you know me.
Yes, Greg, you are recognized and top of the list. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight?
B2UDU also listening.
WIR also just listening.
WB2KWC checking in.
It's a COVID question, and Rich BZ checked in. I think he doubled with somebody, Roy. Back to you.
Okay, a couple of questions back. I get the sense UDU was just checking in, and WIR was just checking in, and Ken, I'm not quite sure. Do you have a topic or a question tonight?
Not at this time. I'm just listening and looking to participate if I can be of any of your use.
Okay, very good. Rich, W2BZ, did I miss your check-in?
Yes, I'm just listening tonight. W2BZ.
Okay, so noted, Rich. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for any questions or topics tonight? Please give me your first name and your call sign.
I got in right before Rich, so if you missed me there.
No, I definitely have you on the list, Craig. You're the number one guy.
Thanks. Then and bye.
Okay, one more time. Let me ask if anyone has any questions or topics tonight. Give me your call sign and your first name. Very well. Okay, Craig, you're up first. What's your question for tonight?
Okay. First thing is first, Ken, I'm glad you're on. So, my question is my Wi-Fi. As you know, Roy, everything in my whole bedroom is on a battery, including my computer. Now, what I asked on the computer net was, is it possible to put your Wi-Fi's router? I'm thinking that if it is on a battery, as long as there's nothing like on the side of your house providing that, you should.
Okay, Craig, something strange is going on. I think maybe you have an intermittent in your microphone connection. You might want to check if it's as tight as it can be because you dropped out a few times. Your audio dropped out. So I didn't get the entire question. I got the mention of the Wi-Fi, and I think you were alluding to the fact of whether or not you have internet provider when you have a power out.
Roy, I don't think it was him. I think it's the repeater. I heard his whole transmission.
Okay, so we have another problem with our illustrious repeater. You want to give it one more try, Craig? Maybe the second one, either we won't have the gaps or the gaps will be intermittent.
Is the Wi-Fi. My computer is on a battery and so is hopefully soon to be the Wi-Fi. Is it possible to put the Wi-Fi on a battery so that way you can still have internet in your house with the power out?
Okay, well, the short answer is yes, it is. The long answer is how long do you want it on? My understanding is your principal computer is your desktop. Your desktop's plugged into a UPS, and your UPS really only will maintain sufficient power for minutes, not hours. So is the plan that you want the Wi-Fi to be run the same amount of time as the desktop, or do you have a battery powered a laptop available to you that you also would like to use in a power out situation?
Comment.
It is very small, and it's got about 355 minutes of runtime, and the Wi-Fi is the only thing that I would put into it. This is a separate battery that would normally be downstairs. So, yes, I would like to have it run basically for as long as possible.
Okay, very good. Someone said comment. You have a comment about Craig's question.
K2CNC. I was transmitting on the Pomona repeater, and it came up on the Glen Oaks, and somebody said they heard a rogue transmission. That might have been me. I did not believe the Glen Oaks was connected with the Pomona. But when I keyed up on Pomona, because I have a dual band, Glen Oaks keyed up. I just wanted to clarify. I may have been that rogue transmission.
Okay. Is that repeater on the same input frequency, 146.250?
I'm not sure. I'm just looking at the screen on my radio, and I have it alphanumeric and not frequency-wise, and I don't have my computer on to confirm that. But I just wanted to apologize if I interrupted your conversation with a rogue transmission. I was on the Pomona repeater looking to get the KQ2H system.
Comment on the battery-backed Wi-Fi question.
Yeah, sure. What's your comment?
K2WIR. It depends on the source of what created the loss of power. If it's utility lines that are not providing power to the trunk line, if your router is still powered and you can't get it from the ISP, you know, don't be disappointed. But if it's just a router for your home, if it was localized to your home and your ISP was still functional, there's no reason why you can't have battery-backed internet.
Okay, I mean, I would agree with you. There's a couple little nuances going on. If you want to have a battery backup for a wireless router, wireless routers and most electronic equipment in general kind of come in two flavors. A lot of them have wall warts, and some of them just have AC connectors, and you just plug it into the outlet. If your access point is built like that, then your best bet is using some kind of a UPS type of a setup. If it's a wall wart, you should take a look at the wall wart itself and see what kind of voltage it outputs. A lot of times it outputs 12 volts. And so if you have a device that gets a DC wall wart power supply of 12 volts, it's rather easy to rig up a battery system that will supply it with 12 volts. And depending upon the power capacity of the rechargeable battery you decide on, you can have the access point alive for hours, days, weeks, or months if you get semi-ridiculous off of it. Let me drop for a sec. Now, K2WIR mentioned and your ISP provider. That's an important thing. If on top of everything you are expecting to use your wireless to access the Internet, you have to make sure that your Internet provider provides for some kind of backup system for power. If you have Fios, the ONT, the fiber interface, has a battery because it's usually connected to a phone line, and phone lines can't be allowed to just kind of die when the power dies. So if that's the case, you have a power in your ONT. You also have to think in terms of the router itself. So the router has to be powered. A lot of routers, again, have a wall wart. If it's a 12-volt wall wart, you can use the same battery connection for that.
The wall warts, I think my Wi-Fi has that. And also, my whole block is underground and not overhead. The wall wart, are you talking about that round circular outlet that you like to twist the wire into? Is that what you're talking about?
The wall wart is the little plastic plug that has the power supply that then has a thin wire that feeds to a barrel-shaped a power connector that plugs into most electronic units. If you take that, it's usually, I've seen it rounded rectangular boxes. And if you go to the portion usually where the prongs are, it will give you the input voltage and, more important, the output voltage and current. So that'll give you a good idea. If it says 12 volts, you're pretty much in like Flynn.
Yeah, and you mentioned, again, that little circular thing, the little rounded barrel outlet plug, I guess, that you normally see sometimes in the house. You have, like, maybe three or four of them. I would assume that you were referring to that, though. But if that's the case, then if the power goes out, then I need a battery that has that same kind of connector through the wall rather than just an AC power outlet.
Yeah, you don't. I'm not quite sure what you mean through the wall. There's about four or five standard sizes for those barrel connectors. Amazon sells them relatively cheap. You can buy them either with pigtails and then just twist the wires of your battery system together, or you can buy just the connector and solder inside the connector if you want a cleaner approach. You know, I usually use calipers to measure the diameter. If you know the inner and outer diameter of the barrel power plug, it's very easy to buy a supply of them. And what's most important is looking at the wall wart power supply unit itself that plugs into the outlet connection and see what the voltage is. Now, most likely it's going to be 12, but there's no law that stops a manufacturer to have an off-voltage designed device. So you look at it and make sure it's 12 volts, and then you just need a 12-volt battery. Now, if you want to be a belt and suspenders sort of guy and don't want to risk that the initial charged battery will be a little bit too high in the voltage, you might want to purchase an inexpensive voltage regulator that takes approximately something around 12 volts and regulates it to a nice, steady 12 volts.
I'll do some of the research and go look at the router. Now, my small battery that I have here initially was going to be used for it, but after seeing that rounded barrel, I'm going to need to do a little more research. But right now, this battery is just a temporary second battery that I have for my PC. So I'll do that, and I'll see what I can do. And then I'll probably take the third battery that I have hiding underneath my current UPS tower and throw it on the router and see how it responds. And on top of that, what I also might do is I'll take my outlet reader, plug it in, see what outlet it belongs to, and then cut the power to that outlet and see if it responds. And if not, then I'm going to have to look into it at further detail.
Yes, Rich and Bill recognized. One second. I just want to remark that it's probably not a good idea to just wire in parallel batteries with output power supplies. I would think that if you could get something that will do some little switching of the power source from the power supply to the battery, There are commercial products that are kind of overpriced probably for what you're looking at. But if you Google it a little bit, you can probably find some easy circuits that you can wire up yourself that will serve that purpose. But let me respond to the people who queried in order. Bill, I believe, you threw out your call sign, WB2QGZ.
Hey, good evening. I apologize for my potential signal, WB2QGZ. One thing to bear in mind, if you have the wrong system, this is a FIO.
Okay, Bill, some of that signal dropped out for me. Maybe it didn't. Hopefully it didn't drop out for Craig. Craig, did you get that?
B2OGB, barely anything, hardly anything. It was like only 30% readable.
Okay, I was worried about that. Bill, I guess you're just close enough in range to capture the repeater about a third of the time. I could hear bits and pieces. I heard that you were alluding to the fact that something about the Fios router.
All right, I'll try again and talk fast. The Fios terminal that comes into your house, is the battery on it only backs up the telephone. Backs up the telephone only. If you lose AC main, you lose internet and television. Copy.
Oh, okay. I was unaware of that. I made the false assumption that it just kept the ONT operational, but I guess it only allows for the telephone service. So that sort of makes sense. What can I tell you? Oops. So there's no actual way of powering the portion that feeds the router. Even if you supply power to the router, you still are not going to get Fios if utility is down?
Yep, you have to either put the power supply for the ONT on a UPS, or in some cases you might be able to put 12 volts directly into, you know, the output of that box where the battery is. You might be able to put 12 volts on there, but the easiest way is to put a UPS on the ONT power.
Comment?
Yeah, Craig, certainly you can comment. So that's an interesting idea. You would need a UPS plugged in to the actual box that goes into your house. The battery would not be sufficient to maintain internet service. But what did you want to say, Craig?
There is a closet that we have underneath the basement stairs. And when you open up that closet, there's this box with all these round things and a single AC outlet. Is that what you're talking about? Because there's a box under there that looks very much like the router.
Well, I do not know what yours looked like. Let's first ask a couple questions. Do you have Verizon?
Verizon is my carrier.
Okay, so my Verizon is made up of at least three different units. Outside of my house is the connection, I think, for the fiber optic. So it's a box. It has wires. It has all kinds of fun things. And it's a large metal box. It looks like you could put a series of fuses in it, but it's one of those utility boxes. That has multiple circuits. One of those circuits then goes out of the box, goes up to my floor. There's a hole in the wall. The wire feeds to another device, which is a very boxy device with a rechargeable lead acid cell battery in it and a plug that plugs into the wall that charges the battery and powers the unit. Then that feeds to the coax that then goes to Fios's router. So that's the third unit. The router to me looks nothing like the box that puts out the coax to the router.
Okay, I think I get what you're saying. So if you have a box outside your house, you need to power that as well. I don't know if we have that outside our house. We're going to have to look, but it looks like I'm so close, but yet so far from being even able to keep the Wi-Fi powered externally through battery.
Well, the Wi-Fi is the least of your problems. As I said before, all you have to do is plug it into a 12-volt DC power supply, most likely, and it will run depending upon the capacity of the battery. We've kind of veered off into a slightly different subject, which is how to maintain your Internet provider. Now, you could use a hotspot in a cell phone in an emergency situation, so that's theoretically an option. But the other is, my guess would be that device in your basement, since you don't, well, do you have anything anywhere in your house that has a charging battery that when the battery goes bad, the unit starts to beep?
Not that I know of. I mean, both of my batteries that are tied into my computer right now, I have them both muted, because I don't feel like hearing that if the battery gets to low charge, it'll just get annoying, so I just have them both muted. David, did you want to say something?
QSO, good evening, gentlemen. So it comes to my mind, one, mobile, hold on, hotspot, and it chases. What about was a large cell phone that battery gave?
Craig, did you get all of that? I'm still having these dropouts, apparently. The audio just drops right out of the signal. The signal of the repeater is fine. It's just the audio drops out for some weird reason here.
That's not you, Roy, WS2N.
Okay, that's good to hear. So, David, unfortunately, I could only hear about one-fourth, one-fifth. I think you were talking about your cell phones, those Android cell phones with the large battery. Is that what you were alluding to?
I was talking about two things. One is the mobile hotspot. Giving them with a separate inexpensive plan. And the other thing I was thinking about was large screen Android phone with a large battery. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand, David. Basically, you kind of a two-prong approach, a battery-driven hotspot and a Android phone that has a much higher battery capacity, and using both of them as a means of creating a hotspot into your cell phone connection. So you'd need a decent cell phone plan, and that's an option. But just to get back at Craig, if you're operating Fios, unless they've changed things since I started using Fios, there is a battery backup system with an alarm when the battery runs down. So if you've had Fios for more than, say, 5 years, chances are the battery's gone down and someone's noticed something squealing and changed the battery. So my guess it would be in the utility closet by the way that you were describing that, you know, there's a box and there's an outlet. So it could be there or it could be someplace else. But I still think Fios requires a battery backup for the telephone line. I don't know. Maybe these days they have different installations whether or not you ask for a phone line. But that's the way it works with mine.
I think that box downstairs in the basement behind the staircase has something to do with it. But, yeah, I think that's probably what would have to be tied into a battery for it all to work. So I'm going to have to look into it in further detail before I even attempt to get this all hooked up because I don't want to do something incorrectly. But, yeah, that box we have in the basement behind the staircase has something to do with it. So I'm going to have to look at that and maybe ask my brother how it would work. So thank you for that, and I am going to clear from this point onward because I want to take care of a couple of things and then get ready for my trip to Hillside tomorrow for work. So thank you, Roy. AC2GX,
you're welcome, Craig. Rich, W2BZ, you wanted to say something on this.
Well, I actually had a question. And the question was, this is a general voltage question. Something requires 12 volts. How much plus or minus in percentage could you give that device before it's not going to work or you're going to burn it out or it's just it's not going to work? Go ahead, Roy.
Unfortunately, the answer is it depends upon the engineer's decisions when building things. Almost everything these days, to one degree or another, has a voltage regulation circuit in it, and they decide what range will be acceptable. Most likely, if you try and plug a 12-volt power supply rated Wi-Fi access point with something like 13 or 13.2 or 13.6 volts, probably it won't cause any problem. And when you get it past about 13.6 and 13.8, you're not going to probably burn it out, but it's going to act very, very weird and erratic. But that's not necessarily so. It all comes down to the regulation circuits when someone designed that particular device. And so, you know, if you don't want to be cautious, if you're a gambler at heart, then you plug it in and you see if it works sufficiently for your needs and isn't quite too wobbly, and hopefully that the magic smoke won't be released and the equipment will be useless. If you want to be a cautious person, there are circuits available all over the place. You can get them on eBay. You can get them on Amazon that will regulate a voltage to 12 volts. If it's a little bit below, it'll boost it. If it's a little bit above, it will buck it, and it'll give you something relatively close to 12 volts for the cautious people among us.
For the equipment, it's better to go low than it is to go high, correct?
Again, not necessarily. One of the problems that ham gear sometimes has is people who have who are running stuff on a battery that's running low. Eventually, it will run. Those batteries can run very low. They can drop lead acid cells as part of their discharge cycle, because go as low as 6 volts before they completely fail. And once again, you'll start to get these weird things. It won't blow things up, but what will happen is its behavior will become more and more erratic. It may restart. It may lock up. It may do all manner of things. So I guess theoretically it's a lot more difficult to permanently damage electronic equipment with low voltage than high voltage. But you can destabilize circuits that are designed for 12 volts by feeding it 6 volts just as badly as feeding it 14 volts.
But then if you feed it, if you fed something with 10 volts and it's working all, to use your phrase, wonky, If you then feed it 12 volts, will it always come back to life, or could there be some damage if you feed it with lower voltage than it's supposed to get without regulation?
Well, in this universe, anything's possible, but it's highly unlikely you'll do permanent damage by applying lower voltage to it. It'll just act erratic and, at worst, lock it up. But it should come back once you give it the proper voltage. Yeah, but, you know, sometimes things that shouldn't happen happen. So is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? No. Yes, someone wanted to make a comment?
Yes, in general, lower voltage will cause erratic behavior. Higher voltage will most likely cause damage due to power dissipation.
Okay, but I mean, you can still have the wonkiness at slightly higher voltages, and again, it depends upon the voltage regulation circuits. If they're very, very sturdy, and well designed, they shouldn't, you know, if they have to handle more than they're rated for, they might be designed to simply trigger a safety fuse of some kind. So, yeah, it's easier to burn things out with too much voltage than too little. But both of them in more narrow range will just produce flaky results from the device.
I wonder how much voltage regulation is in your basic Chinese wall wart. Very little, I would suppose.
Well, I mean, that's a very good question. And again, unfortunately, my answer will be it depends on the engineer and the company manufacturing it. There have been wall warts from hell. There have been stories of people who all of a sudden developed this background noise on a band, and for the life of them, they couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. And at one point or another, they decided to flip a couple of fuses, and the noise went away. And sure enough, they found that the damn wall wart was generating, because a lot of these wall warts are not linear power supplies. They're switching power supplies. So they have lots and lots of kilocycles of RF inside, and if they're not properly designed and properly filtered, they can wreak havoc. The same thing with the voltage regulation. Some companies will use something as simple as a Zener diode, and others will spend the extra 15 cents for a full solid-state voltage regulator that's much more effective. Zeners are affected by thermal and current issues, whereas a good voltage regulator IC isn't. And I'm sure there's some cheapskates out there that instead of that use something ridiculous like a voltage divider circuit to get their voltage regulation. So it depends upon the manufacturer. If you buy it for 50 cents, expect it to probably explode as you plug it into the wall.
And what's the reason for switching power supplies over a regular power supply?
They're inexpensive, they're small, they're very efficient. That's the main reason. There is no way that you could practically shove a wall wart with the current going through it, that's a switching power supply, and push all that stuff into the same volume for the switching power supply if it was a linear power supply. Linear power supplies have work at 60 cycles per second. The transformers have to be much, much more massive, so it takes up more volume, it takes up more iron, there's density, and so it's a much more massive, somewhat less efficient mode of power supply delivery.
How does the switching power supply work?
The basic principle is it takes the AC. I think it actually down converts it. It full rectifies it to DC and then feeds it into a very high frequency oscillator. So it switches it back and forth in the kilocycle range. So it could run something like the power is now alternating 100,000 times a second. With that, you need a very, very small transformer to do the power conversion, and then it runs through a regulator circuit, runs through another bridge rectifier, and then a smoothing capacitor and a voltage regulator, and then out to your device.
Okay, Roy, that's it for me. Thanks.
You're welcome, Rich. Anyone else with any comments on this subject before we call it done and done?
Enthusiast.
Yes, Wesley.
Yeah, I would like you to mention the disadvantages of all switching power supply.
Okay. The main problem with switching power supplies is that they have to be well filtered. If they are not well filtered, they can produce spurs and harmonics and noise all over the place. If you go on the low frequency bands, you'll have a lot of guys who really loathe and despise switching power supplies and will only use linear power supplies, because they remember that day in 1973 that they had a switching power supply that was a mess. They put it on an oscilloscope, and it had all kinds of spurs on frequencies, harmonics, and it was a mess. So if it goes bad, or if it's not designed correctly, or if it's poorly shielded, it can produce a lot of noise and disrupt an amateur radio operator's entire shack. I have a couple of switching power supplies. I have a lot of wall warts that are basically switching power supplies, and thankfully, I have not had any problem with any of them for many, many, many years.
Okay. So, I see disadvantages. Switching power. The switch mode power. The switch mode power output ripple. Regulation is what? To be used only as a. It is off. Voltage? Likely. It has hot. And cost. Then there's enough error. Those power supplies cannot be used. Enter issue.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of what you said was kind of disrupted by some background noise. You know, what can I tell you? If you buy a good quality switching power supply and you check the specs and you don't go beyond the specs, it should work. It works for me. I don't know if industries have different opinions. I know, as I mentioned before, a lot of old-timers will spit at switching power supplies and will only use linear power supplies. I have a 50-amp switching power supply that's relatively light and not terribly expensive, and has been working fine for me for about 7-8 years without any kind of background noise that I could perceive. So, you know, different strokes, different folks. You pay your money, you take your chances. I don't want to stretch this out too much because I want to bring on Andy soon, Wesley.
Comment in one more, you wait.
Yes, Hank.
I couldn't agree more that it's the quality of the supply that counts. Because many years ago, I had a supply built by the Acme Electric Corp in Cuba, New York, It was extremely complex, although it was switching, and it was very lightweight. I can't remember who the original customer was that they built it for. And it, you know, was absolutely no noise, put it on a scope, looked great, never heard a thing on HF. And I've had more modern rigs that were commercially available that were nowhere near as good. So, again, like you say, you pay your money and you take your chances, but you're certainly right, it's a function of who designed it and who built it.
Yeah, Dr. Roy. Let me just quick, then I'm not going to take too much time. I think where the regular switching power supplies are now. Enter XVF.
Okay, unfortunately you have that background noise, Wesley. But yeah, so me and Hank agree. Another factor that you really can't control much is the age that it was made. New technology tends to bring new problems that need to be addressed by electrical engineers. So if you want to be the first guy with the first switching power supply, it's a learning experience both for you and the engineer who designed it. So even if you spend a lot of money, if it's a brand new technology, there's a little bit more chance of getting bit. But now switching power supplies are ubiquitous. They're all over the place. It's almost difficult to get a crappy switching power supply. It's that good. So, again, you just be aware of the brand, the specs, and what have you. And if you want to test it on an oscilloscope, so be it. But like I said, I've had nothing but positive results using a good quality switching power supplies.
You do respond to my. I was asking. It's R, not the linear. Right. It is 2 years. Fired. Six. Sensor multiplex. Sample of high test equipment, lab test equipment, circuit, anywhere that the regulation triple is required. That's where area of the is set and not replaced by switching power supply.
Okay, so be it. I don't know. I mean, this is fields that I have no expertise in. So there may be fields where it is preferable for a linear power supply versus a switching. But in my life and consumer electronics and amateur radio, I don't see any limitation. And unfortunately, there are elves afoot that are stepping all over your signal tonight.
Okay, the next time I'm going to have three times more power.
Okay, you can go 150 watts like I am tonight.
That always says it to space. No, there is not a time. People who are not happy in life. But I have an unlimited amount of power that I can switch.
Okay, hopefully by later on tonight they'll be taking their naps and such. You know, they got their bottles, they'll take their naps, it'll work out. Anyway, it's already 8:49, and I would like to see if Andy's out there and can give us this week's episode of Andy's Corner. So, Andy, please move out of your present corner and into our corner.
Okay, Roy. Yeah, I love the way you say that. All right, good evening, WHCDL. This is Andy's Corner.
and like always, this will be another, or try to be another episode of some topic that maybe some people will be interested in or maybe not. Before I go on, I want to make a note of a few things here. And Roy, you write this down. Okay, jot this on a piece of paper. Next weekend is Memorial Day weekend. I will not be here. I am going away. So I will not be on the TechNet. And the following weekend, which happens to be June 6th, which is Sunday, and is the same day as the Limark Flea Market, at the Outdoor Flea Market, so people will be looking forward to that. I have a wedding to go to. So, and the wedding is in the afternoon. So I will be at the flea market. I will be there, but then I have to leave and put on my tuxedo and go to the wedding. My niece is getting married, so yes. So I won't be here for the next 2 weeks. And then we'll have to talk about the summer, because I'm planning on a couple of trips, which may be a couple. I'll talk about that later on. So we'll have to schedule things, because, you know, the warm weather is here. People are out. People are enjoying the outdoors, not wearing their masks, socializing again, getting back to the norm, and it's a good thing. So it's what have we been waiting for as you all know out there, to get back to a normal way of living. Alright. Now, I was tempted to key the mic a few times in regard to switching power supplies, because mainly I've been talking about repairing radio equipment, or repairing what have you. What in electronics, you know, that doesn't work. And I fixed a number of switching supplies, and I could use that as a topic, basically. You know, without going into all the little details of how these things are designed, because like Roy just said, there's many different switching power supplies on the market, and some are better than others. In fact, I think it was a Linko makes one that you can actually adjust the frequency of oscillation. And as Roy mentioned, there's a number of advantages that outweigh the disadvantages of switching supplies. And, you know, as Roy said, it's efficiency is one, because the switching frequency is much higher than your normal 60 cycles that you have to rectify. You don't need large capacitors. You can use the smaller value capacitors in the filtering circuit. The switch. Hold on a second. Oh, hold on 1 second. Stand by. Oh, looks like I'm having a little problem with my radio. I was making some noise. It kind of scared me, but I just went to lower power. Okay. I'm still heard because I'm listening to myself. That was a wake-up call. Okay. So, regarding switching power supplies, as I just said, you know, they're more efficient. Take up less space. Switching frequencies are much higher than 50 cycles, of course. So smaller components, smaller transformers could be used to achieve a higher amount of current, and so on. So there's a lot of pluses to switching supplies. And, of course, they're also lighter. You try to pick up you can tell the difference between a switching supply and a non-switching supply just by the weight, because of the size of the transformer. Some supplies, linear supplies, can give you a hernia trying to pick it up, when switching supplies are much lighter. Now, to troubleshoot these things, that gets a little bit tricky. So I can mention that.
Roy mentioned using an oscilloscope, which is a great idea. The problem is, how do you connect the scope without causing damage? And I'll mention that because it's very important. Most people that are listening to me are probably not going to be troubleshooting this stuff anyway, so it's just some information. You know, in this day and age of electronics, we live in the throwaway world. If your TV goes bad, you don't send call up a TV repair guy to come to fix it. You throw it out and get another one. If your computer goes bad, same thing. You know, this stuff is cheap enough. I just bought four Bofang handheld radios for $80. $80, which I found on eBay, brand new, and I for a project. And that's four of them. And it's amazing what these things can do for the size. Don't even try to fix these things if they go bad, because you'll pull your hair out. It's almost impossible.
Question.
Yeah. So don't try to open one of those up, Wesley. You're not gonna be able to see anything.
Can you use the switching power supply for electroplating?
Yes. Why not? For higher current, switching power supplies can produce hundreds of amps in a switch mode operation. Why not?
I have a problem with your answer. When you have electrolyte and you're doing electroplating, there is a current variation, and switching at first creates in many times a damage of the power supply. And the second thing is you have uneven spreading of plating over the anode. And the third one is, it's not lasting long. When you have a regular power supply, linear power supply, you don't care. Interesting.
No, I agree with what you're saying, but I'm sure there are switching supplies that are designed to be used for electroplating that are switching supplies. I'm not familiar with any of them because I don't do any electroplating, but you know, in this day and age, there's many types of different power supplies that can offer a switch mode operation besides the normal ones that we know about. You know, there's what is called the buck boost supply, which is a switching supply in a different configuration. And there's another one, I forget the name, it's Buck something. I gotta look that one up. But I'm sure there are, even though, yes, there are linear supplies that would be used for retroplating. I'm sure there are switch mode supplies that are designed that when you start them up, when you start doing the retroplating, they have a certain circuitry that changes the curve of the switch as the power supply turns on, you know. So, I'm just saying that. I'm not, as I said, I'm not familiar with the different supplies, but I'm sure there are. All right, can I continue? Okay, I guess that's a yes. All right, fine, because I just want to make a point here with this, with this troubleshooting. You have to keep in mind, one thing about switching power supplies, they don't use a power transformer. What they do is, basically, they rectify the line. That's the AC line that's coming in. They rectify that directly. So they convert that AC voltage to a DC voltage. And then they supply that DC voltage to a switching circuit, which then creates the secondary voltages from the main transformer that is switching. But you got to be careful with that, and I'll explain why.
Didn't you think that if you have a switching power supply, it is less tolerant to the feedback voltage from the battery?
Wait, what was that? I missed that question.